KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
One of the things that we tell every recruit is that Swarthmore is going to be a challenge. Academically, it's going to be a rigorous challenge. You're going to have to work your butt off up campus to be successful here. And it's going to be a basketball challenge. Our practices are hard. The way we play is hard. If you want a really intense challenge in both of those areas, you're going to be great here.
And our guest this week is Shane Loeffler. He is the new head men's basketball coach at Division III Swarthmore College. Takes over for one of the best in the area, Landry Kuzmowski, who has moved on to take an assistant job at Division I Campbell. And Shane, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you having me.
So you are a SWAT grad. You were a former assistant. Now you're in charge. Since you took over the program, what have the last few weeks been like for you?
The last few weeks have been crazy. It's funny. I've talked to a few coaches. It's just you have this constant feeling of making sure you're not forgetting something. It's not overwhelming. You're just trying to make sure you're keeping your head on top. And so it's been busy. It's been productive. It's also been energizing, right? So talking to our guys, talking to recruits, there is an energy in the program. And obviously there's something that we're going to miss with Landry just because he was such a presence within this program. But at the same time, there is a collective energy that our guys have, that our staff has, that our recruits have in terms of the next step and what we have to do to get where we want to be. And so that's really exciting. So even though it's busy, even though it's hectic, it's really energizing to feel that energy from our players, from everyone around the program.
Kind of take me inside as much as you feel comfortable from the point that I'm sure Landry has a conversation that, hey, this could happen. You know, this is something I'm looking at.
Right.
Two, I'm going to go for the head coaching job, to getting the head coaching job. Like, what is that trajectory like?
I think it's interesting because obviously Landry's had so much success over the past decade. And so his name, you know, has been circulated around quite a bit around searches for the last few years. So this is not untreaded territory for me or for him. And so I've had this opportunity before, not in actuality, but in thinking through it about what I would do if Landry got a head job elsewhere or if Landry took a job elsewhere, what does that leave for me? So personally, like I have such a strong tie to Swarthmore and such a strong connection to the program, to the campus, to everything about Swarthmore that even when Landry was in consideration for going to a head job, my gut and my natural instinct was I'm going to try and stay here and take over. Whether or not the administration is on my side, like this is the program, this is my dream job, this is where I've always wanted to run a program, and this is somewhere that I believe we can win a national championship. So having gone through that before, this was more just it taking an actual step. And so it was nice the way that happened. It was really – I was really grateful for how things actually progressed because there were so many people in my corner, including my athletic director, our administration, the alumni, the team. I had so many people in my corner that it just made so much sense for this to be the next step. So even though this has always been in my mind the place I want to be, it was exceptionally gratifying to see how many other people thought that that should be the case as well.
How much does life feel different right now than other off seasons? Because you are obviously the head coach, but as we're recording this, it's late April.
Right.
I would imagine to a point it can still feel kind of surreal. Like there hasn't been a lot to like pin you down that life is much different now than it was. Or am I completely off the reservation here?
No, I think there's obviously there's pieces of it where it's funny because obviously I've been at Swarthmore for so long. And especially over the last four seasons, the amount of delegation, the amount of kind of coordination that Landry and I have had, it's not as if I was acting as head coach for the last 4 years. It's nothing like that. It's more the fact that the more responsibilities I took on and the more time I put in, it just felt like a very natural switchover, right? So does it mean that I'm the guy who's having one-on-one conversations with players after the season? Yes. Does it mean that I'm the guy who is trying to close the deal for our final two recruits and trying to build relationships with the next class? It does take on a new level of importance or a new level of ownership, but it's not like a country away. It's closely related. And so in that regard, it was a lot more seamless than I thought. It was a lot more seamless than I think a lot of people might see from the outside. But it's been good so far.
Anytime I talk to guys that take over head coaching job, they talk about, you know, the difference in moving one seat over
right
to the head coaching job. Because there are so many things once the season starts that are different. People
right.
think it's just, oh, well, he's just – now he's in charge. He was the next guy. So, but it is a different dynamic, especially when you have been on the staff.
Yeah.
Because the role assistant coach, associate head coach, the dynamic with the roster is much different than – the
right.
head coach, because a lot of times assistants, associate head coaches, you're kind of a buffer. Players maybe
right.
feel more comfortable coming to you with problems or frustrations and
right.
stuff like that they don't come to.
Right.
Are you anticipating that being, if not difficult, but a challenge to manage that changing dynamic with the players that are already on your roster?
Not necessarily. I think the funny thing is it's moving a seat over. It's moving an office over. So Landry and I share an office, but there's a wall in between. So it's funny, the amount of coaches who have come by and knocked on the door and been like, whoa, I didn't know you. Oh, you're over there now. I'm so used to you being right here. So in a lot of ways, even though it's only a seat over and even though it's only an office over, it is a huge shift in some of those regards. I think I was talking to our new assistant yesterday who, by the way, was an alum like me who wants to get into coaching full time. He worked his private job. He had enough of that, and he's been on our staff for 2 years. He's ready for the challenge. But I was talking to him the other day about, I think what something that makes our program special, something that Landry and I try to enact every day to make our program unique, but also kind of build the kind of men we wanted to build, was like we are overtly transparent with guys in the recruiting process when they're on campus. We are incredibly transparent for good or for bad. And I think when we've taken on that tact, and the fact that I'm going to continue taking on that tact means that those relationships aren't going to change dramatically, right? Because I'm still going to be transparent with our players as much as I was transparent with them when I was the associate. And so I think that strategy we've taken on, just in terms of being very upfront with recruits about the Swarthmore experience, being very upfront with guys about their roles on the team, being very upfront for expectations and goals. The fact that we're so transparent and upfront means that I don't think it's a dramatic shift in terms of moving to the other chair or moving to the other office. Doesn't mean the ownership of those decisions is going to rest heavier on my shoulders, absolutely. But it doesn't mean that I'm going to feel like I'm a different person or I feel like I'm filling big shoes, even though like from the outside, that's something that is not it's not escaping me, right? Landry's shoes, the shoes that he left in this program are huge. I'm not trying to fill his shoes, right? We worked together for so long. I'm not going to be him, just like he wasn't me. There's going to be echoes of his impact and his program? Of course. The foundation that he built over this past decade is so strong. But the reality is the way that we communicated with each other, the way that we communicated to guys, means that it's not going to be a dramatic shift in terms of the continuity that our guys are going to feel, the continuity in the relationships. And that's where I feel comfortable in the fact that I don't have to be someone I'm not to fill those shoes or move up the chair or move a separate office.
How much have you run through your mind what your first game as a head coach is going to be like?
Right now, not at all.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, that's where this is such an interesting time, because we're in the middle of recruiting is number one, number two, number three right now, right? When I have some free moments to think about it, am I thinking about offense and defense and what I want the program to look like next year? Yes. But in terms of the first game, I really haven't given much thought, right? Other than scheduling it, because that unfortunately was like the last game. We couldn't find a team. We finally found one. It's going to be a good opponent. We're going up to Connecticut. It's going to be great. But with that, I haven't given it much thought because it's so far in the future, right? I'm more thinking about our first few practices in the fall. I'm thinking about what our incoming recruits, how are they supposed to work and what do they need to do over this summer to help us, because we need everyone on the boat next year. So I really haven't given a lot of thought to the first game next year because, one, it's so far in the future, but also that's partially just how we operate, you know, like as a program, as a team, like we're going to play that first game eventually, but we're not going to think too much about it until we get there, because that's so far in the future.
Growing up, was basketball your favorite sport?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I mean, I'm from a basketball family, and I'm from a sports family, but basketball family. So my dad coached for 30-plus years at various different levels. My oldest brother is the head coach at Loyola Maryland. My other brother coached at high school for almost a decade. And then my sisters actually, you know, they played. They actually were volleyball players. But my sister coached college volleyball for multiple years. So sports has always been important. Basketball has always been really important. That was my favorite sport growing up. I played a bunch of different sports. I played probably every sport under the sun. But basketball was always my love, and that was always – I didn't have goals to do anything else in college. You know, my dream was to play college basketball and to compete. And pretty early on, I knew I was going to be a college basketball coach, like very, very early.
What was it about the game itself that drew you in? Obviously, your father coaching and everything you just talked about it, you're kind of immersed in it from a family standpoint. But there had to be a connection with you and the game itself. What do you think that is that drew you in that allowed basketball to rise to the top for you?
I think basketball is pretty unique in the fact of it's a team sport in which your individual work ethic shines through, not more than other sports, but because there are so many possessions, because there's so many plays in a game, and because there's only five guys on a team on the court at any time. I love soccer growing up. I played soccer. And I worked at soccer. But when you're one of 11 guys, your impact is not quite the same as when you're on the basketball court because you're one of 10 guys on the entire court. And so I think the fact that my energy and my work ethic, like working on ball handling at home, working on shooting, and just playing really, really hard when I played, all that stuff, it became extra important, right? Or it shined through. Right. So like that work ethic and that energy, it really shines through on the basketball court. And that's where I don't necessarily think that's what I was thinking when I was playing. I just loved getting steals. I loved, you know, bringing the ball up the court and pushing and running. I just loved doing those things. But I think that's where basketball is pretty unique in the fact of guys who really like put in the time and the effort and the energy, they're going to see the benefits of it and they're going to see how it impacts them and how it impacts their teammates in some cases more than other sports just because – it's a small court. The ball is going to hit everyone's hands a lot, and everyone's got an impact when they're on the court.
You say you knew from a young age that you were going to coach. Do you feel like you always looked at the game through a coach's eyes?
I would like to say I did. I'm sure I didn't. You know, I'm sure my brother thought I was an idiot when I was growing up. I'm sure. I mean, I can remember the conversations. My dad had 2 years of coaching me in high school where he was the assistant coach on staff. And, man, those car ride conversations were tenuous at best. Because I thought I knew best and he thought he knew best. I mean, my family is stubborn, right? Like my family is confident. I don't think cocky, but confident and stubborn. And we all think we have the right opinion. And so I didn't necessarily know that I wanted to – like I didn't know necessarily being a college coach. I knew I loved basketball. I knew I could coach well just because I – you know, my family ran camps growing up. I helped out at camps so often. I think the bigger thing was seeing my brother do it from such an early age and watching him coach at the college ranks. You know, he was one of the youngest head coaches in the country at Stevens when he took that job, and then he was at Lafayette. And so being able to watch him coach and seeing his kind of impact, it really helped me just illuminate, like, this is a real possibility. And not just a possibility, but, like, this is what I want to do. This is where I see I can make a huge impact.
You, your brother, your dad, same coaching styles for the most part? Like, under a broad umbrella? Or are you all – do you approach it very differently?
There's definitely shades of it, but not exactly, right? I think my dad is his own man, but at the same time – I'm sure if you asked my wife or you asked everyone in my family, yeah, there's definitely times that I sound like him, and same with my brother. And that's funny. In terms of understanding how I'm going to coach, right, because I've been at Swarthmore for so long and I've been with Landry for so long. You know, like I played under Landry before I coached with him. So 12 out of the last 13 years, I've been with Landry. And so, you know, is my coaching style and does my coaching voice sound like him? Not exactly. Does it sound like Josh, my older brother? Not exactly. It's going to be an amalgamation of both. But at the same time, I don't truly know what it's going to be. And that's the whole thing with being a head coach is you don't know what your first – you don't know what your practices are going to look like. You don't know exactly how you're going to coach in games. You don't know any of it until you do it. And so even though I have an idea, it's not going to happen until it happens. So I think my voice is it's probably just going to be a combo of and I'm grateful for this. Josh is one of the best coaches in the country, and Landry, as you said earlier, is one of the best coaches in the country. So if I'm a mixture of those two voices and those two styles and those two stratagems, I'm going to be in pretty good shape because I have two, you know, basically like two of the best coaches in the country to fall back on to ask questions, but also just to trust my experiences and trust my knowledge, because I do have, you know, two of the best mentors, you know, in the country.
So you mentioned you played at Swarthmore. So let's go in the way back machine 13 years, because I think we have gotten, and when I say we, I mean Philadelphia basketball folks, have gotten spoiled by Swarthmore's success. Like, the program is one of the elite in the country.
Right.
Now, when young Shane Loeffler is coming to Swarthmore, that is not the case.
No.
And I think a lot of people, I know I remember when Landry, when you guys really started to cook in the mid-2010s.
Right.
And I went back and looked at the record book, and I couldn't believe, like,
the dark days.
How there wasn't any real success. I mean, no disrespect to anyone who played or coached. So anyway, my point is, what draws you to set up shop at Swarthmore as a college player?
So personally, my recruiting journey is a lot different than most of the guys we get now, just because, well, one, I just wasn't that good. I was good for my high school team. I don't know if I was college good, right? The big thing was Landry actually wasn't the head coach who recruited me at Swarthmore. So that was a really interesting year because I was recruited by Lee Wimberly, who was at Swarthmore for 30-plus years. And so Lee resigned in the middle of my senior year of high school. Landry gets the job at Swarthmore after I had already been admitted and accepted to Swarthmore. And so that was an interesting dynamic in the fact of his first days on campus were my first days on campus. So for me, my biggest draws for trying to play or really for colleges, the biggest thing I wanted to do is I wanted to go to the hardest school I could get into at a place where I could play college basketball. Right. So at the time, my brother was coaching at Lafayette. There was a potential of being a walk-on at Lafayette. That wasn't as appealing to me just because I didn't really want to be a walk-on. That's part of it. But at the same time, I was still trying to go to the toughest school that I could possibly get into. And that ended up being Swarthmore. Now, I already had a personal relationship because my brothers played at Swarthmore. So I grew up going to some games. I was aware of it. But at the same time, I knew it was going to challenge me academically. I also knew it was going to challenge me on the basketball court. Whether or not they had success, I always had confidence. My family's a confident family. I always had confidence in my own ability and also my work ethic to help Swarthmore win games, right? Now, we go to that first year. It's Landry's first year. It's my first year. We're completely building the culture from scratch, right? And that's where it's not that we didn't have some talented basketball players on the team. It's not like the previous decades of Swarthmore basketball were bereft of good basketball players. Like, there were plenty of good basketball players and some good teams. It's a really tough league.
Yeah.
It's a really tough league. I mean, you have Bill Nelson at Hopkins. You have Glenn Robinson at F&M. You have Al Cerretti at Dickinson. Kevin Small or Sinus. You have multiple programs, different programs, who have gone to multiple different Final Fours. So every single year, and we know this with our guys right now, is the Centennial is a tough league. And so it's not that the program didn't have good players. It was more that the foundation that Landry had to build, it was incremental, right? That first year was a lot of tough memories. And my best friends now, my teammates who graduated with me, like, we love those memories now. Like, we laugh at them and we jab each other. But, man, it was tough. Like, not everyone made it for 4 years. And in reality, like, those first 2 years, there were a lot of times where we were, you know, looking at each other like, God, this is freaking tough. You know, and so obviously we stuck through it, and there's a lot of benefit to that, and we all take a lot of pride in the fact of my senior year, you know, we did turn the corner, we did get to the conference championship, and that took a lot of effort, but we felt so proud of the impact that we had, even though a lot of it was like Landry built that thing from scratch. But at the same time, getting the right guys on the bus and also helping those younger players when I was a junior and senior, that felt really special just to be a part of, because even my junior year, and we were 11-14, you know, we weren't great, but we had nationally ranked Hopkins on the ropes at our place. We ended up, you know, we ended up losing that game. And I think Landry might have talked about this at some point, is since that game, you know, we had Hopkins on the ropes. We were up, God, I think we were up 16 in the second half, and we let them come back and beat us. And since that game, our winning percentage is something like 85%. Yeah. And so even that year that was tough, we could still feel like the juniors, the seniors, the young guys, we could feel like something's changing here. We can feel the momentum moving. And so that was the first year where we're like, okay, we've got something special going on here. And fortunately, it's developed into what everyone has seen over the past decade, which is it's unique, it's special, it's something to behold.
What was Landry Kosmalski like to play for?
Tough. I think every guy who played with me knows that. Personally, being a point guard as well, you go to Bob McKillop down at Davidson, you're looking at Landry at Swarthmore. The point guard position is the toughest position, especially when we were not getting in the weeds of X's and O's. When we were running Davidson secondary, there's no position on the court where you will have to be more detail oriented. You have to do things exactly correct, because if you don't, the other four guys suffer. So Landry was tough. He was exacting. His standards were incredibly high. And I still remember, like, there was a practice, and there's so many guys, you know, so many of my close friends now, like, they will bring this memory up every single time we're together, is, you know, I had a tough practice where I was turning the ball over. It was my sophomore year, and one of my teammates was being a jackass, and he was, you know, he was cheating the drill, and I was getting pissed because Landry wanted me to do one thing. I was trying to do that thing, and then my teammates cheating the drill, and I'm like, what the hell do I do? Anyways, I turn the ball over a couple times. I can't do it. What Landry's doing, he sits me out on the sideline and makes the entire team run, multiple suicides. And so I'm fuming because I'm just like, I'm not taking part in the punishment. So now I feel like a dummy because I'm the cause of the pain for all these guys. And Landry's in my ear telling me what I need to do better. And man, I remember getting out of that practice and just being irate. Like, I was just ready to hit something. But now I look back at it, it's like, even though that was such a painful day, like, it was also such a crystallizing moment for me, just in terms of understanding, like, I have to find a way to do what coach is asking to help the team. But also, if I don't, I'm never going to touch the court here. I'm never going to have a chance to play. And that's – I don't want to say that's the day that helped me figure it out, but it certainly helped me understand, like, I understand what Landry is trying to get out of me. And it was very tough because – like I said, I'm confident, I'm stubborn. That stubbornness between Landry and I, like, that we butted heads for 12 of the last 13 years. But at the same time, because his standards were so high, and because he was willing to make it painful, not too painful, but make it painful, those lessons really stuck. And because those lessons stuck, myself and my teammates all got better dramatically. Like, for every guy on the team under Landry gets better every single day, every single year. And so that's where, even though he was really tough to play for, I wouldn't have chosen another. Like, I didn't even choose him as a coach, you know? Like, I fell into his program, and he happened to be the head coach, and I'm grateful. I'm lucky that it was the case.
Time to take a break. We will have more with Shane Leffler in just a few minutes. But right now, I want to remind you that One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. It's time to drive smarter with high-tech features and excellent reliability. It's time for intelligent design plus exciting performance. Get a new vehicle you'll love. Check out the Honda Civic, Accord, or HR-V. Contact your local Honda dealer today. See dealer for financing details. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's get back to our conversation with Swarthmore College new head men's basketball coach Shane Leffler. Given your long history with Swarthmore, how much, and we talked about, like, what the standard is now to when you came in, how much does having your kind of your foundation rooted in a time when it wasn't easy, when you guys weren't very good from a win-loss standpoint, but how much does that allow you when you're talking to the players today to be like, this doesn't happen just because you put this jersey on? Like, we have to work for it. This standard didn't happen by accident. Like, I would imagine you can really talk to players about that because you've seen the other side at this place.
Yeah. And I think that's where I'm actually grateful in the fact of I'm grateful in what I went through as a player and what my teammates went through, and also just the trajectory of our last 8 years. You know, we've had national championship runs, we've had Final Four runs, we've also had first round exit and a Centennial Conference tournament exit earlier than we anticipated. So I've personally seen so many different trajectories of this program, and so personally, I've always enjoyed being the underdog. I've always taken solace in fighting from the bottom, right? And our team has had that in our past, but also the reality is for the last 6 years, it's been flipped on its head where we're playing with a target on our backs every game. And that's something we had to accept and deal with in 2019, 20, 2018, 19, where we were getting everyone's A-plus game. And that's been a benefit to our program because we get everyone's A-plus game, we get better because we're not getting anyone's half-ass effort. We are getting hit every single game, and we know other teams are circling us on the calendar, which for us means we're only going to get better. But at the same time, I think that's where – I don't want to say we're back to being underdogs at all. We have a really good team coming back. We have a really old team coming back. But our guys have the urgency and the energy as if we are underdogs, which I only think can benefit us, because that urgency to think that like other teams don't think you're as good as it used to be, that's great, because if we're working as hard as we're working, we're going to be in really good shape. And so I've talked about that a lot recently with our guys, but also that's going to be one of the themes of this coming year is, yeah, we had to work our butts off for years to get this program where it is. And guess what? You got to do that every single day in this program. That's part of going back to the recruiting piece. What I was talking about earlier was the fact that we're overtly transparent in the recruiting process. You know, like one of the things that we tell every recruit is that Swarthmore is going to be a challenge. Like academically, it's going to be a rigorous challenge. You're going to have to work your butt off up campus to be successful here. Oh, and it's going to be a basketball challenge. Our practices are hard. The way we play is hard. It's going to be a challenge on the court. If you want a really intense challenge in both of those areas, you're going to be great here. But you have to work every single day. And so that's where that ethos is so core to like who we are as a program, not just me as a coach, but that's who we are. And so I think that's where my understanding of how I grew in this program and how this program grew when I was a player starting out, it's so natural to just how our program operates, whether we are number one in the country or whether we are picked to finish fourth in the conference, because we've got the urgency and the embracing of that challenge every single day. And so it's something that I'd take a lot of pride in.
So you graduated in 2016 from Swarthmore. You spent a year at Randolph College as an assistant coach, and then you come back as an assistant here at Swarthmore. Yeah. What's the door? Take me back to the moment. When does Landry reach out and say, hey, we've got a spot. Are you interested? How do you come home?
It feels like forever ago. I honestly can't remember the details, right? Because it happened pretty quickly. And I think that's where something that Landry has done, but also is something that just the Davidson coaching tree has done, is it's a really tight, insular, connected coaching tree. And so when Brendan McShay left, my assistant coach at Swarthmore, when he left to go take a job out in California, it's not that Landry was going to conduct a national search necessarily. It doesn't mean he wasn't going to look at the best candidates, but he wanted people that he could trust in the position. And so when he knew Brendan was leaving, he reached out and said, this is happening. You know, would you be interested? And obviously that was an immediate yes for me. I still had to prove that I could do the job. I still had to prove that I learned something in the year that I was gone. And also, like I said, like Landry and I butted heads a lot. You know, it wasn't even my senior year when I was playing more and doing what he wanted. It's not like it was a perfect harmonious relationship. He and I butted heads, and we continued to push each other when we were on the coaching staff together. So I think that was part of it, was that process was one for him to understand, am I good for the role? Can I do the job? Because that's the most important thing. But two, can I also work with him? Because that's the other piece. And that's one of the big reasons I think like our program has had success, but Landry has had successes. He's such an elite coach. And that relationship between he and I, in terms of knowing how to push him, when to push him, but also when to shut up, that's a really important dynamic. And just in terms of Landry and I had a really good relationship, really strong relationship. We're going to have that for the rest of our lives. It's going to be interesting to see how he does now in a relationship where he's going to have to push and challenge, but also know when to rein it in and hold back, which is something that I've had to do for the last 8 years. And it's going to be interesting to flip it.
When you come back to Swarthmore, I assume there are players you played with still on the roster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now you are back in a position of authority with guys that you used to practice with, I would imagine partied with to a point, hung out with.
Yeah.
Was that hard for you to draw that line that we're not quote unquote friends now? Like, I'm trying to help you. You need to listen.
Yeah.
Was it hard to take over that position of authority at a place where you were a player not very long ago?
I think it wasn't easy. It wasn't terribly hard only because there were two classes of guys that I played with. So when I came back, it was the seniors and the juniors, all guys that I had played with. But I was a captain for them all, and I think I had a relationship in which I'm still, like, some of those guys are my best friends today. But at the same time, part of this goes back to when Landry was building the program, it was about, like, getting the right guys for the culture and the right guys for the ship. And so all of those guys that played with me were so motivated, so intense about the challenge and also about what it would take for our team to be successful that they weren't taking shots at me, you know, for times that we had spent together on campus or parties that we had had. It wasn't like that. It was more the fact that they wanted to win. I wanted to win. They knew I was doing whatever I could to help them try and win. And that was why it worked out, right? Because, I mean, our seniors were desperate to win because they had won the conference championship the year prior, but they had lost in the second round of the NCAA tournament. And so, you know, our three goals as a program are to win the Centennial Conference, win the conference championship, and to win a national championship. Those have been the goals for years. And so these seniors, I mean, they have one more shot to fulfill those three goals. We fulfilled goal one. We fulfilled goal two. And we got close. We lost in the Elite Eight at home before the national championship. But all of our guys were so committed to fulfilling those goals that there was no, like, it wasn't a great difficulty in terms of they wanted to win, I wanted to win, they knew I wanted to win, and they trusted me to help them do that.
So I think the high point for the program from the outside looking in is probably the 18-19, 19-20 years. 18-19, you guys go to the national championship game. Final Four, you win in the Final Four, and you play Wisconsin Oshkosh. Fall short of the national championship, but you are right there. What was that run like? As you alluded, you guys had NCAA tournament success. It wasn't like you showed up and made this run. Like, it was building. Yeah. But to get to that point, what was that run like? And how emotionally draining was it to get that close to a national title and not quite be able to push through?
Great question. I think that's where something our program does really well is keeping things one day at a time and one game at a time. And we talk a lot about being 4D versus 2D and just trying to block out the noise outside, block out what people are saying about us or for us or against us, just to block it all out. Like, what the 19 players and the four coaches or the five coaches, like the guys in this room, the guys in this locker room, that's what matters. And so taking it one day at a time, taking one game at a time, it helps in the tournament just because what a lot of people who are in the sport realize, but what a lot of people outside don't realize is the NCAA tournament is so much about matchups. Mm-hmm. Like, matchups are such a crucial piece to whether you win a game or not. And you could be the number one team in the country. You could be unranked. It's matchups are huge. And so especially for D3, when it's back-to-back games, you're playing Friday, Saturday, and then I guess Thursday, Saturday for the national championship. But keeping it so focused on, like, this game and what do we need to do to win this game, it helps you block out the noise and it helps you kind of keep the focus on this game is going to be the toughest game we've played all season. And then you get to the second round. This game is going to be the toughest game we've played all season. Then you get to the Sweet 16. This is going to be the toughest game we've played all season. And the expectations go out the window. You know, we go through We go through the first and second round. We play an out-of-our-mind, unbelievably historic game, beating MIT, setting the NCAA record for three-pointers made consecutively in a single game. I think it was 17 or 16. And we go to play Randolph-Macon up in Amherst. And Randolph-Macon is a juggernaut. And we barely scrape by that game. Barely scrape by. And, like, our culture was on full display. Like, we came back. We were down for 38 minutes. And then we play Nichols, who upsets Amherst at Amherst. And when I say that gym was packed to the brim, Nichols is not that far away, and Nichols loves their basketball. So Amherst, the home team, gets upset in their gym. So we're playing Nichols at Amherst in a neutral gym. And when I tell you that was the least neutral gym I've ever played in, Nichols packed that place. I mean, there was standing room only. And so that's not what our guys expected. That's not what I expected or our assistants expected. And it was like, doesn't matter. We got to get the job done. And so I think that keeping the single game in mind, like, that helps us navigate that and deal with those matchups because we're just keeping our focus on them. But at the same time, like, there's a separate piece. And, you know, like, Landry and I both took a lot of lessons from that national championship run. The national championship, it is different. Like, it's different than the previous five games. It's different than the previous 29 or 30 games you've played, because you can't set low expectations. The normal scout is out the window. If you scout this guy and he's played, you've seen his last 5 to 10 games, and you think he's a weak link defensively, national championship, he's not going to be. Everyone's going to be playing their best ever game in the national championship. And so that was something, not that we didn't know, but it's definitely a lesson that we took in terms of trying to understand is some games are different, and that's okay to understand. So the emotional drain after that game, yeah, it was tough. I only got 2.5 hours of sleep that night because I, you know, had to do the scout, and Landry and I were up until 1:30 in the morning talking, and then we were up again at 4 or 5. I can't even remember because it was a blur. But it also just gave us an energy in terms of we were so close, like, so as close as you possibly could be. You know, we lost two players, including an All-American point guard. But, man, did we feel good about the guys coming back. Like, we felt fantastic. Like, this is one of the best teams we've ever had. We've absolutely got another chance at this. Doesn't mean we're going to think about it right now, because what do we have to do to get back there? And then it goes back to the one day at a time, one game at a time, which, you know, it helps.
Following year, you guys arguably, or maybe even better, I think you were number one in the country for a lot of that season.
Yeah.
Win your first two NCAA tournament games, getting ready for the Sweet 16, and then COVID shuts everything down. And I would imagine a different type of frustration than losing the national championship, because this is something you have absolutely no control over.
Yeah.
And you just get kind of rug pulled on your way up the mountain. How long was that the process? How hard was it to process? Just, and because there was just so much uncertainty in the world, but in this little, you know, the thing you're focused on, Swarthmore basketball, there's also this uncertainty of, like, this isn't supposed to end. This is, it was so counter to everything, you know, where it ends win or loss, like it, don't like it, fair, unfair, it ends with a loss. This just kind of ended in a decree from the NCAA, and everybody goes home to their separate rooms.
Yeah. I think, and Landry's talked about this before, and I share a similar sentiment in the fact of it was a disappointment, not necessarily in what happened with the NCAA, right? The biggest disappointment was for our two seniors, right? So we had Nate Schaefer, Zach Odell, they're two All-American big men who put everything, literally everything, into that program. And so when it got stopped, it was more the realization that their careers are over. They're not going to get another shot at this. They're done. And they're done in such an unceremonious way, in which they didn't get to walk off to the applause. They didn't get any recognition. Like, it was just over. And that just sucked, right? It was disappointing because as much time as they put into the program and as we put into that season, it wasn't necessarily disappointment that the season was over, because we did everything possible as a team to win and to do everything within our power to be the best possible version of ourselves. So it wasn't regret or shame about, like, what we had done. It was just disappointment for the guys who wouldn't get another shot at this, you know, because that's the reality, is, like, college basketball is such, it's so fast. It goes by so quickly. And would we have had a chance in the national championship? Yes. Would we have won it? I don't know, because it's so much about matchups, you know, like, those six games are really tough. And so I think the reality is it was just disappointing in the fact of those two guys who put so much time and effort and energy into this program had, you know, probably the most disappointing finish of anyone else because they couldn't finish. You know, losing is one way to finish. You can at least give your all in a loss. You can't give your all when you're just told that the game's not happening and you got to go home. So that was really tough just to understand for them. But also, they're resilient guys. Like, they handled it. They're both doing great now. Like, it's not like it affected them for the rest of their lives, but it was a bitter ending for them.
So then 2023, you guys go to the Final Four.
Yeah.
How did lessons learned, like in the national run to the national championship, like deep runs before, help you guys just kind of understand the terrain and what it takes? And like you say, that day to day, you know, because there aren't a lot of programs that are able to pull that type of experience out of their back pocket.
Yeah. I think it really, the biggest thing for how it helps is you really understand the kind of rhythm of the back to back. You understand the rhythm of how to present the scout and how to simplify, because the reality is on that second day, you have to simplify things so much because the more information you give to the guys, the slower they're going to play, the slower their feet are going to be. And so I think a lot of it was understanding the rhythm and the amount of information to provide. And then the other piece is just like knowing the logistics of, you know, traveling to Fort Wayne, when you want to get there, how you want to do the first practice, how you want to do the second day, just how you want to do everything leading up to it and how you're prioritizing time. I think that experience gave us every advantage it could have. And at the end of the day, like, we ended up losing to an awesome team. Christopher Newport ends up winning the national championship. We have no regrets about, like, again, this goes to matchups, is we are a couple shots away from beating Christopher Newport, which then means we're a couple shots away from – it's not like we think like that. Christopher Newport and us, like John Kerkorian and Landry, I mean, we had played them three out of five NCAA tournaments. They knocked us out in the second round. We beat them in the Final Four. Then they beat us in the Final Four. I mean, it's just like, for two teams that haven't matched up in the regular season, it's a titanic kind of dynamic between the two of us. And so it's not that we felt like we could have done anything different for that game. Like, we did everything we could have to win that game, and Christopher Newport was just better that day. And that's part of basketball, is sometimes you're just not going to have – sometimes you're going to play your 9 out of 10 game, and Christopher Newport plays their 10 out of 10 game, and that's what it is sometimes.
My final question for you, what are you most looking forward to as a head coach, really digging into? As we talked earlier, it's recruiting everything now, but once you got your guys, practices start,
yeah,
counting down to games, like, what are you just looking forward to?
Even though it's probably going to sound cliche, I think something that's been really special within our program, just because our program is so connected, like, it is such a family, right? And I think Landry talked a lot about his understanding of seeing guys as they went on in their careers, as they became husbands, as they became fathers, and just seeing the trajectory of their lives and how much Swarthmore basketball impacted them, and also just us as coaches, how we impacted their trajectory. And there's a difference that I completely recognize in terms of the impact that Landry had as the head coach versus the impact that I had as assistant or associate head. And so even though those guys, like the guys that have been in the program, you know, I saw so many of them last week when we got up to Massachusetts for the funeral of Jared Groff, who just recently passed away. And it was tragic. It was sad. And the level of connection that our guys shared in that moment, I mean, it's true, like, it's really something special to behold because it's so unique and it's so special. And so understanding now that I've had that relationship with so many guys as a brother and even as an assistant coach, but more so like a brother, I get to have that experience now as head coach, and not just watch the trajectory of these guys' lives and not just indirectly impact it, but directly impact it, right? So to recruit the guys into the program, to help mold them before they're even on campus, but then to help shape them and guide them and mold them for those 4 years and then see what they can do afterwards. That's something that I've obviously seen through Landry's eyes for so long, and that's something it's going to be really special to experience firsthand from that chair, from that office.
Shane Leffler, thanks so much for coming in. This was great.
Thanks, man.
And And that will do it for this episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Swarthmore College head men's basketball coach Shane Loeffler for being our guest this week, coming in studio to talk. Now, if you like this show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.